25, verse 26. But this anguish of separation as praise is greater than the happiness of enjoying with those loved ones. Separation is so pleasing to the mind that it cannot be described. It always transforms at last into an abundance of pleasure. Only experts in tasting these moods can understand how this happens. So basically this answers all our anxieties about, well, how does this work? Is that it does, and when you get there, you'll understand it. The so-called bliss of merging into the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is often said to be indescribable, but the bliss of pure prema is even harder to describe. And most hard to describe is the inconceivable ecstasy of transcendental love and separation, which is born in pain but grows into the greatest possible pleasure. The ecstasy of separation is not the miserable experience it seems to outsiders. It is manorama, the cause of full satisfaction for the heart. If someone still asks how one can feel happy within misery, he should know that only the rasiks, those who have spontaneous eagerness to taste this prema, can understand it. 127. After the pain of despair is relieved, one's heart feels fully satisfied, delighting constantly as one enjoys the great pleasure of meeting with one's beloved. Those who have not yet realized their natural attraction towards Krishna cannot understand the ecstasy of separation. Right? Because if you aren't attracted, how will you understand the separation? Right? The two go together. When you understand the attraction, then that will have some meaning. Like that.
It means we shouldn't ask. The logic is, if we understand everything later, when it will be revealed, so all our questions are actually in vain.
No, it brings us to the position to understand that we don't need to ask. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, by having material things, then you understand that you don't need material things.
But that's Osho. That's the philosophy of Rajneesh.
Well, in the Vedas, they call it Grihastha Ashram. You know, so you have one ashram to get prepared for it and two ashrams to get over it. But the point is you only get over it if it's connection to the Lord. That's the problem. Osho never really got over it. Right. You know what I'm saying? You don't need 90 Rolls Royces to figure out you don't need a Rolls Royce.
Osho had 90 Rolls Royces?
Yes. You could get away with that in Oregon.
He didn't know about the other parts?
I don't know, but somehow or another in the ashram in Oregon he had 90 Rolls Royces. Why 90? Why Rolls Royces? I have no idea.
Maybe he was waiting to expand or something.
Maybe. Yes, yes. What reason? You go drive to each state, right? You know. Yeah. No, the point is you engage the senses in a regulated way in the Lord's service, then simultaneously there's the satisfaction of that, and you figure that this isn't important on its own. It's the niceness of that engagement is its connection to the Lord. Right? That's the thing. So now by asking all these questions, then we come to the point where we understand that there's only a limit how many questions we can ask on. See, because it's about a taste. Like if I say kumquats. Mm-hmm. Okay? So now you can ask, well, what does it taste like? Mm-hmm. You know? Or let's say, what about durian? Funny how his smile got more as yours got worse. How about Limburger cheese?
We reached the limit.
Huh?
We reached the limit.
Okay, yeah. So. How about a durian, Limburger, and onion cheese sandwich?
Wow.
No?
No.
No, okay.
Stick
to the kumquats. Okay, so the thing is, if someone who doesn't know what a kumquat is you can even, you say, try to describe it, but they can't taste it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you say it's good, but then they don't necessarily, you know, can't relate to it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole idea, is you describe it, but somebody doesn't know. You know, you can give some ideas of what it's similar to, but it won't actually explain what it is. Because it's not a matter of intellectual, it's a matter of actual taste. So that's the thing. Up to bhava, then the intellectual element actually has some, you know, solid credence. But from there on, it's actually a matter of taste. So we can understand, you know, aspects of it and how it fits together, but what it actually means to experience prema in these different things, that we won't know. Does that make sense?
Can it prepare us for when we reach, as we get closer and closer?
Can it prepare us?
Yeah,
what do you mean by
if
prepare?
We start to experience something, then, oh, this must be like this or that, and because we have some theoretical knowledge of it,
yes,
then we kind
means
of
that's there, but it's like the four Kumaras and heard about the Lord from Brahma. Mm,
yeah.
But it's not until they experience that it really has. So we can give an idea, but the experience, you have to desire it and therefore make that endeavor. Does that make sense? So the intellectual process is useful up to the point that you actually make the endeavor. But if you only intellectualize and don't make the endeavor, then it's not that worthwhile.
It's superfluous when we reach the level. Like the whatever the Kumaras heard from Brahma, is that superfluous when they taste it?
No, because then what he was describing, then they can appreciate. But it's not that. See, the point is it's not the knowledge that drives the taste. Right? It's the
yes.
interaction with Krishna and the devotees that actually is the basis of the taste.
Yes.
But the knowledge is a tool to actually come to that position. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It does. Yeah. Yes?
So when the taste takes over, we don't actually need the intellect anymore to...
You don't need the intellect to decide that it's good or bad.
Can we say it's like being on an ocean with a compass? That's the intellect. And then when you can see the shore you're aiming for, that's the taste, and you don't need the compass anymore. Would that be a valid way of...
Yeah. To say, because it's still there, is that the ocean's still in the same direction on the compass, but the compass can only point the way. It can't deal with the experience of what it is, the ocean. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does this work? Yes.
So the real taste comes in Pratyambhava. And before that, it's just very minimum.
It's something there, but the thing is even if you're dealing with very minimal amount, you're dealing with reality. Okay. While even here you have the greatest pleasure, you're dealing with an illusion. So therefore, it's just like you have a stadium of darkness, but one candle will, you know, you can see the stadium, and that's just one candle. So that's the whole idea, is the taste that one gets from the devotional process is much greater than the taste we get in material life. Right? So that's why we continue forward. But when we're convinced that this is the only thing that's going to give, it's not that this and that, right? It's that it's only about Krishna, then that's when it starts getting quicker. Is that?
Yeah. Because we see often that people, you know, leave Krishna consciousness not because of the philosophy, but because they lost their taste.
Yes, but that taste also, as we were reading in the morning, that all those things come by the Lord's mercy. So losing taste means there's something that's not done properly. And it's not what someone else did improperly. It's what we did improperly. You know, like that. But it's also, they may lose the taste gets clouded by something else. If they're cultivating something else, then that taste will grow, and this will wane. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's about desire. You want to taste on the material side, then that will grow. You want to taste on the spiritual side, that will grow. But if we're just saying, I want to taste on the spiritual side, Maya's going to check. Do you actually? And if you do, then it will move that direction. And if you don't, then she'll give you some things, trick you into, yes, now everything's great, and then she'll throw you again, and then you'll be miserable. But then you're hoping, no, I can get that taste. I can, and you know, then starting all over again. Right? So, yeah. Is that something? Yeah, because ultimately it's down to the taste. But this gives us an understanding of what is there, because we can compare it to the concepts that we understand, you know, to get an idea. But it's actually by Krishna's mercy that it actually has spiritual relevance. Right? Otherwise, because the materialist hears these things and doesn't mean anything to them, because Krishna doesn't give that mercy to reveal. Those who have not yet realized their natural attraction towards Krishna cannot understand the ecstasy of separation. Right? Because here separation isn't very good. Right? But that's the thing, is there it is. So until we've gotten that attraction towards Krishna, then does that make sense? Because here the sense touches the sense object. There is an experience. As soon as they're separated, that experience is gone. Right? You can think about it on the mind, but the sense can't appreciate it anymore. But Krishna, because he's absolute, then one can always be with him by that feeling. Right? So there's a difference there, because you're dealing on the eternal platform. Well, here, everything's temporary. And anything that you contacted here that gives you an experience, that's Krishna anyway. All right, and we're feeling bad because we're not in contact with Krishna. But the problem is it doesn't come out pleasant for us because we think it's the object that we're missing. Right? The happiness was actually from contact with Krishna. The unhappiness is because we stopped contacting Krishna. But we thought it was a particular object of the senses that was generating this happiness, and now not being connected with it, that's generating the distress. So that's why it doesn't work here. But in the spiritual platform, then it's all about Krishna. Right? So then it's different. That's why you can explain it up to a point, but then after that you can't, because we're used to dealing with Krishna but think we're not. So then when we're actually dealing with Krishna, the happiness that's gained is so much
greater, because then you're directly dealing. Is that?
Yeah. Then there is a doubt, because our whole entire practice is based on principle of separation, because we never met Krishna, and we still practice. So we anticipate him, that we're going to meet him somehow.
Yes, yes. But the point is, the separation, it would infer meeting.
Yeah. Separation is that.
You know, you have met, you know, the particular, you know, the, how you say, the bucket of halava. And now the bucket is empty. So now you can feel that separation.
Yeah.
So if we're practicing to get to know, if we're talking about separation as greater, yeah, that means we'll have to meet Krishna for feeling that.
In the past?
No, in the future.
In the future, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like that. But here, that element of, how you say, yeah, that makes sense. But even if we're going on that premise of the present is that separation, but it's still, it's driving us forward.
Right.
So, and this is just separation in practice. And it's good, so the other must be better.
Yeah.
Is that? Because we're accustomed to functioning from this neutral state. You know, we're just learning how to deal from the positive state. Yes.
Yeah. It's just difficult to understand the personality of Krishna, because it's just, it's an idea, it's a scripture, it's a teaching, and like that. But, and yeah, it's still, it's good.
Yeah, well, that's why we have so many things that we get an idea. But we know through the devotees.
Yes.
Yeah, so then it works out. No? Yeah? Okay. Yes.
Like we in the temple, we see Krishna. And when we go, we miss
it.
Isn't that a small
yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. No, that's there. But we're talking about when that is on the platform of constancy in samadhi, then we're talking about it's bigger than that. So that's hard to explain. Because we're used to things don't go... See... Here it's about, it doesn't go the way I want. That's why I feel bad about the element of separation. But there it's not about what I want, it's what Krishna wants. So it has a different flavor. Yeah? I mean, sadhana is good, you know, and bhava is better. Prema is better than that. They should not vainly pretend to be expert in things to which they have no real access, but should instead take guidance from the authentic rasikas in the line of Vaishnava parampara on how to gradually become fit for understanding the subtleties of devotion. Faithful hearing and service are required. Still, the material mind is demanding, so neophytes may ask, doesn't excessive misery normally result in either delusion or death? Why should unlimited joy arise from misery? Granted, the laws of nature dictate that pleasure is generally followed by pain, and pain by pleasure. But this doesn't mean that pain literally becomes pleasure and vice versa. It means that circumstances in this world are always changing, so that neither pleasure nor pain can long continue without being replaced by the other. To say that some kind of suffering matures into the highest ecstasy is unreasonable. Right? So that's the doubt.
Yeah.
In answer to such demands, to justify viraha bhava by logic, what pure devotees personally experience may be offered as definite evidence. Pure devotees do indeed enjoy ecstasy and separation. And since no other cause for this ecstasy can be ascertained, the cause must be their intense experience of what appears from the outside to be suffering. To help newcomers through the devotional process understand Viraha Bhava, Krishna speaks the current verse, comparing the ecstasy of Viraha Bhava to the pleasurable sensation of relief from pain, a relief with which everyone is familiar. A person may struggle to achieve some object of satisfaction, and though his struggle may be painful, when he achieves this object, the pain turns into joy. The ecstatic distress of Viraha Bhava may appear similar to the pleasure that follows pain. But as experienced here by the phrase sapannavat, as if experiencing, this is only the external appearance. In reality, the ecstasy of separation comes not from the eventual meeting and enjoying with one's beloved, but from the pain, quote-unquote pain, of separation itself. That ecstasy is complete satisfaction, which one never feels any insufficiency. That ecstasy may be compared to the pleasure of gratification after deprivation, but actually it is much more sublime, right? So it's not dependent upon that you had and you lost, or because you lost, you will gain. It itself just has its own taste. The mind of an ordinary person is relieved when he can rejoin those he loves and again gratify his senses. But a pure devotee's greatest ecstasy arises from serving and remembering Krishna in separation. Haribo? Oh, well, don't worry.
Not a care in the world.
Yes. I'm wondering which Anubhava that falls into. Illusion, madness. Yeah, so in other words, there's no activity that generates it. It's just Krishna's mercy. Right?
Yes.
So we can understand why only in our sampradaya they deal with these things.
Yes.
Right, because the other sampradayas just absolutely do not deal with this. It's not even something on the table.
Only in private or...
No, this just not dealt with. It's just not something... You just talk about being with the Lord. So the element of separation is there, but the focus is on being with the Lord. It's not that they don't feel separation, don't feel happiness from, but there's no focus on it.
I seem to remember one time we were discussing that. I think the Sri's, maybe some of their like very elevated personalities would actually not speak about it.
No, that's about Sarva Dharma Paritya Jama Mekam Sharanam Braja. If you say that in the lecture, they'll go shh. You know, that's their secret mantra.
That's not even that.
That's prapatti. Yeah, that's how we preach to the guy at the Sunday feast to get him in the door. Right?
You know?
Give it all up, surrender, yeah. You know, and then shave him up. Yeah, that's where we start. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. Only we could deal with this.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Viraha Bhava, according to this description, it's not about pain, but it's about absorption in the Lord.
It's about absorption in the Lord. That's the whole thing. We look at it from the externals, but that's why it's saying it's the highest, because the intensity, it's like if you're with somebody, then there's so many things happening. But if you're not with, you're totally focused.
Yes.
And so the intensity of that happiness of absorption in Krishna is greater than when you're with Krishna. But the point is why it's there is because you like being with Krishna.
Right.
So therefore, there's going to be times with Krishna.
Our problem is we think about our own happiness.
Yes, that's the thing.
It's about the pain.
Yeah. So that's the thing, because we're using that medium of pain. We say it's, but the point is even we say, you know, but why would you, the medium of pain? It's like most of what people call happiness in this world is pain.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying, when you're laying on the bed after eating that one bucket of halva, yeah, but you're glad you ate it. You know, you can't move, you can't breathe, you can't, you know, like that. But, yeah, you know. But you're happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that.
This is Sattva Kabbalah.
Yes, yeah, okay, yes, yeah, stunned. Stunned, incoherent, can't speak. Yeah,
yeah.
So many of the Sattva Kabbalahs, yeah. But like that, so many things are there. You know, it's like, you know, the people go to the gym. It's not that it feels good, you know, but they say it's happiness. Well,
yeah.
So that's, yeah. You know, it's like you know, when the roller coaster goes off the edge. You don't see these big grins of happiness and people sitting there with pleasant giggles and all
fear.
That. Yeah, but they say it, they're happy.
Right. You know? At least they can feel they're alive.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. Yeah, you just don't want to follow that path too far. Right?
Then, yeah, then you stop feeling alive.
Yeah. I forget what it was. Yeah, okay. 128, one may want to feel that separation again and may indeed feel distressed if one cannot. Thus, a person who can remind one of a beloved not present is considered the most sincere and helpful friend. So this is even taking it into another, just where we thought, okay, we can kind of, then it brings up another. So in other words, that separation, but someone who reminds you of the person that's not there, it increases the separation. The neophyte mind may still be confused. That mind may think, quote, according to the axiom that pleasure leads to pain, and pain to pleasure. The abundant joy felt by an elevated devotee in prema bhakti is bound to give way to disappointment when circumstances change. As in this world, they always do. The more one is elated now, the more one will suffer depression later. Premananda is greater than the ecstasy of worshipping God in mere reverence, and certainly much greater than the ecstasy of impersonal identification with the Supreme. Therefore, when the bliss of prema is interrupted by the pain of separation, one is plunged into the worst distress. End quote. To dispel this confusion, Krishna now conclusively proves that the apparent pain of viraha bhava is in fact pleasure. The hearts of devotees absorbed in viraha bhava are unavoidably compelled to seek more of it. They cannot tolerate losing this ecstasy. Krishna's proof, therefore, is simple. How can anyone's heart feel the urge to suffer more and more pain unless the pain is really pleasure? Right, because it's a matter of what do you call it? The medium that is coming through, then we've identified certain mediums are good, certain are not. But the point is anything connected to Krishna, it's always good. Is that?
Yeah. So this is akin to Veda Vyasa.
Yeah. Outsiders may perceive a devotee's ecstasy as suffering, and the devotee may speak and act as if it were, but the truth must be just the opposite. Judging from the strength of the devotee's urge to continue suffering viraha bhava, that bhava must in fact be the ultimate happiness. Right, you know, it's just like here, someone gets into a mood, and one could easily change it, but they prefer to stay in that mood, you know, until they're satisfied with that mood. Then they can move on. Yeah. Yeah. A material example may help clarify this point. Although the coldness of ice is the opposite of the heat of fire, Ice placed in one's body may feel hot as burning coal. Does that work?
Not really.
Not really?
No.
Is that, it feels like it's hot, but it's actually cold.
Yeah, but then you got the thing. So as if it is burning.
Yes, but what he's meaning is in the feeling itself.
Yeah, the feeling is there.
Yeah, so it looks like cold. It looks like hot, but it's actually cold. So it looks like pain, but it's actually pleasure. But he was saying the external symptoms may be similar. They look like they're suffering. They may talk like they're suffering, but it's actually that they're. Yeah. But basically, it must be good, otherwise Krishna wouldn't come as Lord Chaitanya to taste it.
Yeah.
Like that. And because he has his separation, but it's not as great as the devotees.
In the form of Krishna.
Yes. So the devotees' separation from Krishna is then the greatest. So therefore he has to come as his own devotee to taste what they're tasting. So it must be good. Well, no, but that's what it says. It looks like, and they may talk like, but it's not. So because we have to remember, this is Krishna speaking. You know what I'm saying? So one would have to take him as an authority.
He's
literally bouncing off the walls. But, he could, say, hey, bring some lights in here, bring in a video, like that, and do something to distract his mind. Play hopscotch, something else. But he's not. He's happy to go in there and experience. Does that make sense? Yeah. So culturally, you deal with it as it's painful, but in actuality, it's only, is the ecstasy. So in other words, you're giving things to try to relieve the pain, seeming pain, but what you're doing is actually increasing the ecstasy of separation. So that's the. So that's why only Ramananda Rai and Srup Damodar would be there during that time, because they would talk things about Krishna, because you're separation from Krishna, so you say things to remind them of Krishna, but because you're still separated, it just makes it worse, right? But at the same time, it's made it better. That's why they're there. Does that make sense? So we keep on going?
Yes.
Keep moving, yeah.
Maharaj, would it be like when you lose somebody that you really love, there's pain of separation. But if you always remember the really good things, and so although there's a pain in being separated from that person, this is often true, that's on the course.
Yes, yes.
There's still this pleasure of the remembering.
Yes, it's there.
Is it like that? And it gets kind of easier.
But
it still can be, there are still sort of
times
of pain.
It's, how you say, the experience is pleasure. It's not, as you mentioned, it's not that it becomes converted.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that it doesn't get converted. But it's feelings.
Yeah, so that's why at this point Krishna is just saying this is the way it is. And then the acharyas are giving doubts that may come up, and then answering those.
Yeah.
Like that. Because all we're doing is showing that highest range, so then we're inspired to be involved in. Yes?
Krishna's talking to his queens here.
Yes.
But will they be able to understand, or just something?
I would say, means the element of separation they'll be able to understand, because they have that whenever he goes and things like that. But the level that the residents of Braja experience it, then that's another thing. Yeah. but at the same time as they're the expansions of those same personalities in Braja. Because he has these activities to perform, they come. So therefore, he's experiencing that amount of pleasure. They are also. You know, so they can both appreciate that it's greater in Braj. So it's not that there's a problem in also this hierarchy, because generally the personalities involved in the hierarchy are the same persons. You know, and some expansion of theirs, you know, either direct or partial, like that. So it's not a problem to say this one has, you know, experiences more than that one, because it's still this one in this capacity. You know, like saying the high court judge at home experiences more happiness than the high court judge at the office, right? Like that. But it's the same person. Like that. Because that's only partial. So then that's... Well, all it is so that we keep that focus on that ultimate goal. Because the point is to get Braja Bhakti, you have to actually be interested in it. You have to have that desire. That's actually the qualification. So by this constant association, hearing, chanting, remembering, that's then that develops, cultivates, and develops that desire that it brings us to that stage. Is that so? Yeah. Yes.
No, it's there. It's also there.
Why wouldn't it be there? He's always in Vrindavan, but as we remember, the gopis get upset by the blinking of their eyelids. Right? So that's an 11th of a second. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, so I'm not sure how often the blink happens, but it's often enough to be extremely annoying for such devotees. Right? And then the point is when Krishna's out with the cowherd boys, is he with the gopis? Is he with Mother Jashoda? Right? When he's with the gopis, is he with Mother Jashoda or the cowherd boys? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. When he's with Mother Jashoda, the others may be there, but they can't manifest their full exchange. Does that make sense? So it's always there. And these eternal associates, they're always coming here for the Leela, and so then they're tasting it here. Right? Does that make sense? So it's always. Yes? No? Okay. A material example may help clarify this point. Oh no, we already did that one. In this example, the burning sensation from the ice is illusory. The numbing coldness, real. Similarly, the pain of Viraha Bhav is a false appearance, distinguishing the reality or disguising the reality of indescribable joy. The difference between the ecstasy of separation from Krishna and the common sensation of being touched by ice is that the deep feeling of Viraha Bhava is known only to a few, to Krishna and some of his most intimate devotees. So it's not everybody who gets a slushy understands Viraha Bhava. Right? Yeah, that's the thing. You're sitting there, your throat freezes, you can't do anything, but you eat the rest of it. So that's
Viraha Bhava is only experienced in Vrindavan, in Braj?
On this level, yes. Because they're the only... See, it's like to that degree that there's, you know, how you, that commitment or surrenders to that degree that there'll be the pleasure. Right? So they're 100% surrendered, so they get 100% of the, you know, effect of being absorbed in Krishna. Is that? Krishna in this verse is referring specifically to his own ecstasy in separation from the residents of Braja. But his description equally applies to their ecstatic remembrance of him. Or to be more correct, it applies to the Brajavasis with the exception of the young gopis. These gopis are never relieved for a moment from the tension of Viraha Bhav. So they're always experiencing. Right. Otherwise, why would Krishna himself, if it's not good, go to Mathura? Because then he's feeling this separation. Right. Since even when together with Krishna, they are in anxiety about losing him, right? Because it's they are with Krishna, but he's just going to go in a few hours.
Yeah.
Right. So then that's... They never lose touch with this ecstasy, and so have no reason to think about regaining it. Right, so here Krishna's talking about gaining it. You want to gain that ecstasy again. But here he's talking about the gopis. They never have that problem. They're always experiencing this. Just in other words, there's Viraha Bhav mixed with Sambhog. Right? You know, so like that it goes.
Did we just say that Krishna goes to Mathura to experience the separation?
Yes.
That's the
why not?
Main, no. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out because there's
you
sometimes
you think the cooking's better there or something. Or?
Then, no, probably not.
So, okay. Yeah.
But it, there's also
it's not
something.
That it's bad.
No. It's good. Yeah, okay. It's levels of good. It's the main point, actually.
I would be underlying for him, just like Lord Chaitanya comes for three purposes.
Okay,
one, attract the living entities to Krishna consciousness. Two, to nourish the devotees.
Yes.
And three, to taste that the feelings of separation or love that Radharani feels.
Yes.
Like that. Otherwise, it's like this. You have God sitting there. Someone, you know, how does somebody walk off with his queen?
Yes.
And then, you know, they have to go, and then he has to go with a bunch of monkeys to get her back. And that after a big fight, you know, I mean, that is the biggest fight, biggest war that there's ever been.
Yes.
You know, not necessarily the biggest fight, but the biggest war. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So why do all that? Unless there's the element that feeling of separation is something... to taste, right? But the Lord and His devotee can, and His energy can never be separated because they're one entity, right? Just different aspects of one entity. So therefore, it's through pastime that you and yoga maya that you generate that they're separate. Is that no? Okay. Yet they do not consider the pain of separation a goal for anyone to strive for, because it burns them more sharply than a million forest fires. In the gopi's own words, "Dear Uddhava Prabhu, when Krishna was here in the company of Sankarsana, he enjoyed all these rivers, hills, forests, cows, and flute sounds. All these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. Indeed, because we see Krishna's footprints, which are marked with divine symbols, we can never forget him." So, therefore, they're always remembering, because it said whatever will remind you of Krishna then increases that ecstasy. So then by being in breath, everything there reminds them because everything's connected. Yes?
So you mentioned that the other sampradayas, they don't deal with this
no.
thing. So what would be our meditation? Is it on Vipralamba, or is it on the devotees of the Lord?
It's on Krishna. Krishna and the devotees and their interaction. You don't have to meditate on being separate. That's not an important thing.
Okay.
You can meditate that the material world means you're going to be separated from whatever you like or don't like.
In the material world?
That, remember, Manu was saying, for the sannyasi, then he contemplates how that who you want to be with, you can't be with, and who you don't want to be with, you end up with. You know, so all these kinds of things, you meditate, and then you just see the material world isn't worth it. It's not worth the endeavor that we, that, how you say, the material world is overrated.
Always comes the opposite.
Yeah, like that. But these things in the spiritual world then give great, great happiness. Because the point is technically you're never separated from him, but at the same time, is that effect is there. Because that taste is then what the... Okay, we'll break here for a few minutes. Getting to the end of this chapter, I mean this section.
The whole section, yes.
Do we end the section?
On the papers that we have now, I think that there is more. No, that's ends. Yeah.
That's ends. Okay, so we finished part one with this. Wow, okay, cool. Yeah. Seven chapter in one in book one and seven chapters in book two.
So we move on to book two.
Well, it's either we move on to book two or do two of Bhagavatam. But I think it's we may move on to book two. Like that. Depending on how the Bhagavatam goes, then we can maybe start Sandarbhas next year.
Oh.
Instead of having to do them over 2 years, we can do them over 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. So we just yes. Don't deal with that. Some of the people are some resources.
Well, what we think it was one book this year, one book next year, but it goes much quicker.
Yeah.
But somehow this part, the first part, is much bigger than the second part. With only seven chapters here and seven chapters there. Is it two books, volume two, or is it first?
No, volume. The second book is two volumes.
Oh, okay, okay. So I confused. Yeah, because I knew it's double, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so we'll see how far we get. You know, it might also have to go into next year, but we'll see. But again. Okay. Okay. As this statement implies, the gopis do not worry about the pain of forgetting Krishna, because forgetting Krishna is something they cannot do even if they want to. They sometimes would like to forget Krishna to avoid the ever-increasing agony of remembering him. And certainly they do not need to ask to be put in, they do not need to ask to be put into a fire of separation. The gopis feel the pain of separation from Krishna constantly and in a unique way. Therefore, the happiness they enjoy is actually greater than that of anyone else. They are superior to all other servants of God, and to all his other intimate devotees. 129. Please understand, when someone made mindful of those one loves, one is given back one's life. Forgetting those dear, more dear than one's own breath, is more painful than dying. Right, so to forget, that would be the worst. So remembering, then actually that's what gives the inspiration. Those dearest life one can never forget, but when reminded of them in a special way, one feels happy, like one who has lived a life of good fortune. Just as one always remembers the most important events in one's own life, Krishna's devotees always remembers Krishna, and Krishna always remembers the devotee. Sometimes, however, that remembrance becomes especially sweet, as when stimulated by the words of an eloquent Vaishnava. Thus, this enhanced remembrance is like the satisfaction of a person whose life has been filled with fortunate events, one success after another. In contrast, a humdrum, mediocre existence with no outstanding events is as sad as a life encumbered by poverty. Or, applying this analogy to the matter at hand, without transcendental love, remembrance of dear ones becomes tasteless. Yeah. So that's why the Bhagavatam and these you know, the writings of the Acharyas are so important, because they remind one of Krishna.
Yeah.
So that becomes the most important. Narada accepts boons from Krishna, 131 to 146. 131. So today you have favored me greatly, and therefore I am delighted with you. Please choose whatever benedictions you would like, right? Because he's been reminded of the Brajabasis by Narada Muni's coming. Narada reminded Lord Krishna of the gopis' absolute attachment to him, and for this Lord Krishna is thankful. 132. Sri Pariket said, the sage began singing Krishna's glories, playing on his veena and shouting, Jaya, Jaya. He praised Lord Krishna, the giver of benedictions, with songs filled with names arising from his pastimes in Braja. Narada wanted to ask for a few choice and rarely obtainable benedictions. So he first sang for Krishna's pleasure so that Krishna would be inclined to grant Narada's desires. No, it's smart. Most pleasing to Krishna was Narada's ecstatic recitation of names Krishna had acquired in Braja, like Gokula Mahotsava, Jashoda Nandana, Nanda Kumar, Gopa Gopi Jana Priya, Gopi Gana Manohara, and Putana Mochana. That'd be a foreign name. Putana Mochana. (laughs) 133 to 134. Feeling great pleasure, Narada, the king of sages, now wanted to hear of this perfection directly from Lord Krishna's own mouth. Dear Mother, Lord Krishna is the all-attractive lion amongst generous benefactors. Now, therefore, Narada begged from him the first blessing he wished to receive. Narada already knew about Krishna's mercy, but he wanted to hear Krishna describe it in his own words. Pure Vaishnavas never lose interest in hearing such topics. Narada had spoken with many devotees, beginning with the Brahmana leader of the devotees at Prayag, and ending with Uddhava in Dwarka. And from each he had heard the same story, that someone else, not the devotee speaking, was favored by Krishna. Narada was particularly curious about how the devotees he had met, even though they varied greatly in material status, had perfected their life in all respects. All of them, from the Prayag Brahmana and the Southern King up to Indra, Brahma, Shiva, Prahlad, Hanuman, and Uddhava, had achieved remarkable success in performing religious duties, in acquiring exalted means for enjoyment, in disentangling themselves from illusion, and in perfecting the transcendental art of serving the Supreme Person. Right, so they've acquired exalted means for enjoyment, and they've disentangled themselves from illusion. So that means the exalted means for enjoyment, they were all engaging in the Lord's service. All of them had achieved their manifold success by only one cause, Krishna's grace. Narada had long been curious to better understand how Krishna distributes his mercy, and now he was eager to inquire from Krishna directly. 135. Narada said, Sri Krishna Chandra, please grant that no one will ever feel he has enough of your mercy, your devotional service, or pure love for you, the reservoir of ecstasy. Narada wants to be assured by Krishna that no matter how much of Krishna's favor a devotee may receive, the devotee will never become self-satisfied or complacent. Rather, he will always think of himself unworthy of the mercy and in need of more and more. Okay, so then that explains also before all these persons that they'll say, no, this one has, more. I have less of the mercy. Narada mentions Krishna's mercy, bhakti yoga and prema, all three together. Even though they become manifest, in a causal sequence, not all at once, Krishna's mercy leads to bhakti, which develops into prema. What Narada implies is that Vaishnavas on various levels of devotional progress have different needs. A neophyte needs special mercy from Krishna and his devotees to begin the process of bhakti yoga. An intermediate sadhaka needs ample opportunities for practicing his personal bhajan. And a mature devotee, driven by a strong urge, needs to taste Krishna prema. Let the impersonalist be satisfied with the theoretical self-realization. Narada and his followers never have enough of the ever-increasing ecstasy of discovering their relationship with Krishna. So that throws an interesting light at them. Let them, because the Mayavadis are so satisfied with their position. So he says, yes, let the Mayavadis be satisfied. We as devotees will go on and on and on, wanting to more and more and going deeper and deeper.
Right. Right? Thinking of this devotee who came to Prabhupada and asked for blessings to seek another guru. Prabhupada, yeah, sure. We'll never find a bona fide guru in a million lifetimes or something.
Like that. Yes. Yeah. He was a bit of an academic, that one. 136. The Supreme Lord said, O preceptor of all clever scholars, what kind of benediction is this? My mercy, my devotional service, and ecstatic love for me all have this nature. That should be simply obvious, right? So we're having Sambandha, his mercy, Abhideya, the devotional service, and Prayojana, his ecstatic love. So on all three levels, one is always absorbed. To Krishna, it sounded ironic that Narada was asking for something that is already an established fact. Since Narada knows everything, he must have had some hidden motive. And indeed, this was so. He wanted to hear Krishna himself extol the glories of Prema Bhakti. 137 to 138. O sage, each of the devotees you saw and heard about in your wanderings here and there, from Prayag to Tirtha to Dwarka, is perfect in all respects. Each of them can deliver the entire world. And each has truly received my mercy. There exists between them only degrees of perfection. Right? So they're all perfect. It's just the degrees of perfection. Because right? you want to be very careful. It's not, this one's not actually, it's the next one. No, perfect. Then there's more perfect than that, more perfect than that, more like that.
It's the completeness we're talking about.
Let's see. In each of the places Narada had visited, from Prayag to Dwarka, he had met with pure devotees who personified the transcendental virtues of bhakti. And he had heard about others, like the residents of Sri Vaikuntha and Sri Nandavraja. By the strength of Krishna's mercy, each of these devotees was situated in perfection and able to elevate others to perfection. This does not mean, however, that the love for Krishna lacked individual distinctions. Pure devotional service is by nature full of variety, so no two devotees are exactly alike. A formal ranking among Krishna's devotees does not exist, but still, they show some differences in excellence. Ultimately, Srimati Radharani and her companion gopis are the most excellent devotees. The other pure Vaishnavas acknowledge the supremacy of Srimati Radharani without envy, being satisfied with the unlimited happiness of serving Krishna in their own individual ways. The second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the glories of Goloka, will conclusively demonstrate that every pure devotee of Krishna enjoys full satisfaction in his own loving exchanges with Krishna. 139. Yet none of these devotees is ever satiated. Please therefore ask from me some other more satisfying benediction. Other than the Vrajvasis, no one is closer to Krishna than the Pandavas and Yadus. They are so fortunate Krishna lives with them in close intimacy, and they are able to share this fortune with their entire families. Nonetheless, they are also dissatisfied thinking themselves unworthy, lacking in pure devotion and surrender. So here is that it's not actually a lack, it's that because they are never satiated in the performance of devotional service and the taste that is gained from there, then they'll always feel that their position is not actually that good.
Is it also that the service will kind of stop if you're satisfied? It doesn't really...
That's why he's saying, let the Mayavadis be satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. That's,
they're not doing any service anyway,
so
there's no loss if they stop. They stop doing nothing, then there's not a problem. Is that,
So you can be ecstatic and never satisfied at the same time.
Yes, that's what we were discussing this morning, is that on the material, one becomes satiated,
yes,
right, but never satisfied.
Yes.
Well, on the spiritual world, one's satisfied but never satiated. Right? So satisfaction, you can go on being satisfied eternally.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Well, here you become satiated with, you know, everything being overrated.
Yes.
Yeah. 139. Yet none of these devotees is ever satiated. Please therefore ask for me some other more satisfying benediction. Oh, we read this whole thing. 140. Sri Parikit said, Narada danced in sheer joy, and like a mendicant asking alms, he begged from Krishna two excellent boons. Speaking to the Lord, the crest jewel of charitable persons, this is what Narada said. Narada was delighted to hear Krishna confirm that all the Vaishnavas he had visited had fully received Krishna's mercy, and that despite of such good fortune, these humble devotees were never satisfied with themselves. He danced for a short time and then approached Krishna for two specific blessings. Like a beggar folding his hands in supplication and holding out his cloth to ask charity from a rich man, Narada praised Krishna so that Krishna would be inclined to grant his request. 141. Sri Narada said, O Lord, never satisfied with your own charity, I have now achieved my goal. My labors have borne fruit, for now I understand in a practical way who the object of your greatest mercy are, who the objects of your greatest mercy are. Narada had taken the trouble to journey from the earth to Brahmaloka and back, and earlier in his life he had exerted himself in scriptural studies and austere meditation. Now he feels assured that all these efforts were worthwhile, for with his own eyes he has seen the truth of what is told in the Vedic scriptures. Most valuably, he has heard from Krishna and his devotees in Dwarka about the super excellence of the Braja Gopis. 142. This is the only benediction I need obtain, and for me it is the greatest mercy. But still, O King, among those who give charity, I have one long-cherished desire. Since Krishna insists on being generous, Narada wants to request a few wonderful benedictions. Although the desire Narada is about to express has been sitting in his heart for some time, Krishna should not worry that it might be impossible to fulfill. Narada reminds Krishna that Krishna is, after all, the most competent of all who give charity, and therefore no benediction is beyond his ability to grant. 143. O swan gliding in the lakes of the Brajavasi's love, I wish that I may wander everywhere, always chanting, drinking the nectar of your name. These most sweet names arise from the ocean of Gokula and spread the glories of your infinitely varied dress and ways of acting. As I wander, behaving like a madman, may I distribute joy to everyone in all the worlds. An emperor swan likes to visit various lakes, where he swims about and enjoys liberty, unimpeded by lesser birds. And Krishna finds his delight in the hearts of his surrendered devotees, each heart a unique treasure house of manifold ecstasies and loving dedication. Narada wants to serve Krishna as an exemplary Parivrajakacharya, preaching the glories of Harinamamrita throughout the universe. By chanting Krishna's names, Narada will enjoy the highest pleasure and also share that pleasure with everyone else. The bliss of Harinama will inspire such joy in Narada and his followers in disciplic succession that they will become like intoxicated madmen, laughing, crying, dancing, singing, and sometimes showing all the static symptoms at once. Thus, these devotees will forget their bodily needs and worldly duties. The names Krishna acquires in Gokula are sweeter than the names he acquires anywhere else, including even names such as Vishnu, Narayana, Narasingha, Ramachandra, Madhuranatha, and Yadavendra. The names of Krishna in Gokula Vrindavan describe qualities of his that cannot be found in any other abode. Only in Brajabhumi does Krishna place a peacock feather in his hair, gunja ornaments on his ears, and garlands of kadamba flowers around his neck. Only in Braja does he perform. So these particular things you'll see there. So then, what comes up in a conversation is that it comes up that, okay, therefore all other depictions of Krishna, you know, in his Vishnu expansions and avatars shouldn't have peacock feathers. Right? Yeah. That's generally what comes up. But you'll notice in all our ISKCON paintings, they all have. Mm-hmm. So what does this mean? They're all Krishna. That's how we'll see. Does that make sense? So because of that, then that one little bit is there. So everything else is going on, but the peacock feathers. You understand? So it's not wrong, because the devotee sees that this is Raja Krishna. He's performing this pastime. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not the technicality of it that is perfection. It's actually the relationship and the taste of that. Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's why, you know, when all these early paintings were done and they all had peacock feathers, Prabhupada didn't have a problem with it.
Yes.
Like that. So then that's why we don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, who has?
Huh?
Who has a problem with
it? There are people who have problems.
Is peacock feathers or is Krishna?
Oh, well, you have both also, yeah. Yes.
Isn't it the form that's given by the acharya, so we just accept it?
Yeah. So it's just because that's what's given to us. Because just like Prabhupada, he says the deities he's giving us the style of dressing is Kaishore. You know, he's going to dress one way as a you know, Pauganda, another one in Kumara, another one in Kishore, another in Yovana. Just like in Udupi. He starts off in the morning just as a little kid in his kopins, you know, with a handful of butter. You know, and with a, what do you call it? A mystery, right? But then, as the day goes, they dress him, you know, keep changing the dress until the last darshan at night, he's four-armed, form Narayan in Dwarka. Like that. So, you know, that's something they do every day, you know, or at least on, you know, major occasions. I heard it's every day, but like that. So, you know, if they're not doing a special dress or something, but if it's just a regular day, that's how it starts. So we're good. Because otherwise, sometimes, you know, I don't know. You know, I say, back in the '90s was the peacock feather whole thing. You know, this, that, and it was very, very major, the peacock feather discussions.
Now it's something else. So we shouldn't worry too much about these discussions going on today, because in 10, 20 years it will be something else.
The whole point is understand, it's like, what does it matter?
Yeah.
You know. Right. He doesn't, you know, if he's in Dork and he doesn't have, then it's fine, because it's just mentioned here he doesn't have. But at the same time, as if he does have, it just reminds you of him in Braja. And so this is the whole point. He doesn't have a problem of being reminded he's in Braja. They say don't disturb the mood, because it's not that the lower mood is more relishable than the higher. He has a pastime, he's going to perform it. Like he's in Dwarka, you don't see him saying, okay, that's it, I'm leaving here. But he's very happy to Narada for having reminded him. Right? And so even if we say Dwarka Krishna doesn't wear a peacock feather, then during this pastime he was wearing a peacock feather. And he was happy that arrangement was there. Yeah.
The whole point, they're afraid of Rasavas.
Who knows? I think it's just, you know.
Can we say it's like a guy who's at work being reminded of his family? Rarely he gets angry about that.
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. You know, it's not like, you know, everybody's there in their little cubicles and then, you know, the boss comes in or the floor manager comes in, gets out of stool, stands on it so everyone can see, and announces that tomorrow everyone's got to have a picture of their whole family and other, you know, nice pictures on their table. If not, then, you know, you're going to be docked a day's pay. And then everyone goes, oh, man, you know, what's going on here? You know, this is getting too much. You know, I think I'm going to find another job. You know, like that, yeah. No, it doesn't happen, so. Okay. Only in Breja does he perform such pastimes as drinking the life air of Putana and breaking the cart in which the demon Shataka or Shakata? Yeah, I was going to say. Is that all these years I've said it with the T first. And then it's again, oh my God. But it's actually okay. Was hiding. Only there he is called by such sweet names as Nandanandana, Jashoda Vatsala, Gopika Manohara, and Braja Janananda. Whether by speaking, thinking, hearing, or physical contact, if any person in this world comes in touch even once with these pastimes of yours and is convinced of their importance, may he be endowed eternally with the power to worship your feet in pure love. Feel resplendent with the saffron dust from the pitcher-like breasts of the blessed gopis. Okay, so, yeah, if he's convinced of the importance of the pastimes of Krishna with his devotees, then may he always be blessed with that service to the Lord's lotus feet and the power to worship those lotus feet. So therefore, that goes back to what we were at the beginning of the class. We were saying, well, what's the importance of it, even though we can't really understand it? But at least we'd be convinced that this is important. And because of that, then we get the Krishna's mercy. And then we can have the ability to appreciate it and taste it. Narada now submits his second request. He wants to be assured by the Lord's personal promise that anyone in the future who directly or indirectly experiences the transcendental nectar of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes will be blessed to relish the taste of pure love of God. When he says, kaschid api, anyone at all, Narada means that prerequisites as to caste or any qualifications, material or spiritual, should be put aside. This is where you say Haribol.
Haribol.
Because if it wasn't for this, in other words, if it wasn't for this request of Narada Muni, then good chance we wouldn't be sitting here, right? You know? Okay. Because Krishna's glories and Krishna's devotees are all merciful, simply coming in contact with them should automatically make even the most uncivilized, wretched persons pious and fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
From this, what is our part to play? God has asked for this benediction. We were fortunate enough somehow to get this benediction.
Yes, but now it's having come in contact, you know, it is our business to be convinced of the importance.
But even this part of Krishna's mercy and our devotee's mercy, conviction.
But still, we have to want it. Because, see, always desire is always there with the living entity. You know, that's always there. That independence of desire is always there. So there's no such thing as means the Krishna consciousness, that one will be Krishna consciousness, you can say that is the natural. But when it's going to happen is when you desire it. When you desire it, then Krishna can reciprocate. But it's not because of your desire that it happens. It's because of Krishna's being pleased and giving his mercy. But if you don't have the desire, why you should give his mercy? So in other words, Krishna wants to give his mercy, but he's not going to give it if you don't want it. So when you want it, then you'll get it. Is that something? Huh?
This desire we also get by the mercy, or
How we get the desire?
You have to desire the desire.
Okay. It also comes by mercy.
Yes. And so then we have to desire to desire to desire.
We need that desire.
And like that, then Jayapataka Maharaj went on for 5 minutes, literally. Anybody's heard this lecture?
Yes.
Huh? You've heard it? Literally, it was 5 minutes. He was sitting there, just then to just going. Then you must cry like this. It was just. it was far out.
When we understand the meaning, then we can express desire to them.
But you see the importance. It doesn't mean that you fully understand. You can see this is important.
Value.
Yes. So when you value it, then it will happen. But you have to value it, yes.
So following the same logic, then if we desire to be part of the pastimes of Vrindavan, then we can get it.
Yes.
Otherwise, if...
That's why it says if you desire to be part of the pastimes in Vaikuntha, then you'll get that.
Easy.
You know, it's just like if you'll be, let's say, you want a bundle of notes, and so I give you a bundle of 1 rupee notes, and you're happy, so then why I'll give you the 1,000 rupee note bundle?
Even you're offering the 1,000 bundle, and I say, yeah, maybe I'd rather have the 50s.
That's yeah.
Sometimes what we do.
Yeah.
Some devotees are okay just with the heavenly planets.
Yeah, that's
a
yeah. According to the problem, it's more than some.
Just the liberation, Brahma Jyoti and stuff.
That less. Yeah, once I had one devotee, we were talking about how you know the pure devotional service is more important than liberation, so we're not worried about liberation. And then after the class, somebody came up to me and says, but will we get liberation? Okay, we're not worried about it, but are we going to get it? You know, their point is, I'm tired. I want to get out of here. You know, so they're very, very worried about that. All these years, I'm not getting liberation. Yeah.
But it has to be like clear definition of desire, very confident or something like that.
I mean, it's like, yeah, it should be clear. There shouldn't be moments of like Harry Potter or something. It has to be. The more it's constant, the more effective. If it's there once, then you're on the path. But it's when that becomes constant that it becomes dynamic. Yeah, that's why Bhagavatam in that like where is that? The second chapter, I think, about constant when devotional service. Maybe in first chapter, it's talking about that when devotional service is constant, then one gets pure. You know that those said Nityam Bhagavata Seva. Yeah,
this is right at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. That's yeah, without interruptions. That's either first or second chapter of Bhagavatam. You know, first canto. So it's that is the basic point. That is the important element, that there's that stableness. Because the thing is if you're looking for a result that's eternal, then you should always be desiring that. You know, if you want a result that's temporary, if you occasionally desire it or not, then it doesn't matter. So if you ever do get it, it doesn't, because you're only going to have it temporarily anyway. You know? Does that make sense?
Stableness.
You know, like those 90 Rolls Royces. He doesn't have them anymore.
Stableness. And can we also say it's like kind of chastity? Like
chesty.
This like only thing we want.
Chesty.
And we don't jump from one to chastity.
Oh, chastity. I thought chesty is just like you have heady. So it's chesty, you know, that feel it, you know.
No, no.
Yeah,
if we just concentrate on one, not just jumping from one to another, oh, maybe this is better, maybe that is better.
Yeah, of course. The point is, if there's no stability, then it's that you have jumping around so you don't know, but there's also just that there's a stableness and focus. Because you'll be focused on Krishna consciousness and focused on something else and focused on Krishna. So it's not necessarily that you have various ways that you various paths you want to follow. Even it's the same path, Krishna consciousness, but you get distracted by these other desires.
Can we say commitment?
Yeah, my commitment. You know what I'm saying? So in this case, it's not, means either one of them is going to be a problem. You know, somebody's with one person and they're thinking about so many other persons, then that's going to get in the way. Or when they do think about somebody, they only think of this person, but at the other times they're also thinking about, you know, the lawnmower or, you know, other things like that. You know what I'm saying? Either one, you're not stable. So when it's steady, and that doesn't mean steadily thinking of somebody else, like all kinds of other people. I always think of someone else. And, you know, I'm stable.
It's individual, right? Very individual.
It's individual, but there's principle. The one principle of being stable and steady, but this individual, the particular application of that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
What if the desire is constant, but we feel also some doubt? Will I achieve this stage or not? Is it possible for me to achieve this stage?
Why would you achieve it if you doubt you can achieve it?
Because
even if you achieved it, you wouldn't know you've achieved it, so it wouldn't matter.
So if this doubts will come, what should we do with them?
With them. I would have a tendency to get a sugar sack, not a potato sack, because the sugar sack's stronger. Stick them all inside, tie it up really nicely, and then toss it into the Ganges. Or if that's too far, dig a big hole, put it inside, cover it up.
Can we burn them?
Yeah, you could try that also. To put a stake there, put a lot of grass, and then burn it.
Try that Saturday morning.
No, don't bring him, throw him in our yagya.
Should we serious procedure?
Yes, serious procedure. Yes, serious ceremony.
Does it mean that we just have to believe Krishna's mercy and to be sure that Krishna is so merciful that he could give us anything we desire?
But what does this anything mean? It means you can get anything you desire, but getting him, it has to be about that. So whatever it is you're absorbed in, then that's what you can get. You're like you said before, you want to go to the heavenly planets, you'll get it.
And that's why we're studying this book, to figure out...
Yeah, that's why we're studying this, so that we figure out that that's not... Because otherwise we get up to Indra, and he says, no, it's not happening here. It's Brahmaloka, he says, no, not here. You know, so it just keeps going up. Does that make sense? So in other words, you should be focused exclusively on Braja Krishna and developing love for him. And then you'll get that. Does that make sense? But it has to be constant. Yes? No? Yeah?
But she was saying something about position. Position.
She? You said Shiva or she?
Position for the Jiva.
Position for the Jiva.
In the service to the Lord.
Who is she?
The Mataji. Because I also had this question with the Lord.
They were discussing before. Okay.
No.
Okay.
She said achieve and she give.
Oh, achieve and give. Okay. Jeeves the butler.
Jeeves in Worcester? Jeeves in Worcester?
I'm not sure what his last name is. I only know his first name is Jeeves.
Jeeves, and then he's the butler of Worcester. Worcester.
Oh, maybe. I mean, in Woodhouse, right? Woodhouse, or however you say his name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next.
We're on the same
page.
Yeah. Maybe the wrong page, but it's the same page. Okay. Remembrance of Krishna naturally arises in the heart of one who meets a pure devotee of Krishna and hears from him about Krishna's pastimes. The only qualification the hearer of Krishna Katha needs is that he be kridhi, eager to hear and ready to trust the authority of Krishna's representatives who speak his message. Right? So that's what you're looking for. Yes.
So this is the important point.
Yes. This is the one you can mark and underline.
From whom we hear.
Yes. Yes, from whom we hear, because we should be eager to hear and we should trust. So that's why even though any devotee can give, it's the one that you feel that connection with and you trust.
Because this is established the mood, actually.
Yes, yes. Yes. What did Prabhu ask?
Well, the question was that this is the important point of from whom we hear. Because this establishes the mood.
From whom we hear. I mean, the general is generic is a pure devotee of Krishna. But it should be that we are eager to hear and we trust. Then that will work. That's why then the more preachers there are, then the wider range of individuals will be eager to hear and to trust. Because how one person presents Krishna consciousness, that doesn't necessarily inspire another one. You know, so each one has their something that inspires. So then like that. But it mentions that, yes. Does that work?
Yeah, for neophytes, it could be also very confusing because they see the difference, they don't see the oneness.
Yes, but that's why even seeing that, if they have faith in one person, you know, then it will work. You know, and as they mature, then they can see broader. But the point is it still works. That's the perfection of this system. Is this light supposed to be kind of bright?
Seems like maybe it's not. Okay.
Should be. Okay, it's not.
Anyway,
okay. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why Rupa Goswami says Swajati. You know, has a similar nature. In other words, because we're going to relate through the conditioning, right? So, therefore, then because there's unlimited aspects of Krishna and unlimited ways of presentation, so that those aspects and presentation that one appreciates that inspires one, and one has faith in, then that's what you should be. That's what you get involved in. So it's not a problem of this or that. It's a matter of what works for you. You know. You know, but within it, you know, it should be coming in proper parampara and everything like that. Okay. Here. Very good. Equipped with this one quality of confident determination to hear with faith, a Vaishnava can remember Krishna vividly by listening to accounts of his pastimes and visiting the places where he performed them. As mentioned earlier, the gopis told Uddhava when they met him in Vrindavan, "Dear Uddhava, when Krishna was here in the company of Sankarsana, he enjoyed all these rivers, hills, forests, cows, and flute sounds. All these remind us constantly of Nanda's son. Indeed, because we see Krishna's footprints, which are marked with divine symbols, we can never forget him." Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-49-50. So whatever will remind you of Krishna, that's what we want to be involved in. But then it's mentioned it should be in parampara, right? So if it's coming in the parampara, then we know, okay, from here we can listen, right? But if it's outside the parampara, then it won't have that potency. You know what I'm saying? Technically it may be the words and the stories, but it doesn't have the chit potency.
Sahaja?
It means if you're taking sahaja as an all-encompassing term, yes.
Or it can't even be Mayavadis. Mayavadis will sit down and tell stories about Krishna, because their idea, the common person, can't actually understand the philosophy. So they'll just tell stories and stuff like that. Yeah. Yes.
It might be controversial, but sometimes devotees, when they speak, they may be in Parampara, of course, connected to Prabhupada and his representatives, but they might give their own interpretation of whatever they understand.
Yeah, well, that'll be their realization. So that realization may have a broader range or may not. But as long as it's correct...
might not be.
Well, that's another thing. Okay, but it's not correct, and that has to be dealt with. That's a whole other topic. Yeah. But here it's meaning to look for someone that does have this, that you are inspired, and then you do that. You don't worry that so many are not. You worry about who is. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you don't worry about which stores don't have what you want. You look for the store that does have what you want. You know what I'm saying? Right? You know, therefore, in California, you know, in Los Angeles, you have to have a car. Because the store that has what you want is on the other side of town, right? Always. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
What happened when some devotees...
Oh, I thought you were going to say, no, but you can take a bus. The eco alternative. Yes. Okay, go ahead. No, I mean, is this something solid? You know, a devotee who just says, you know, I'm a Balaram man, and that's, or is
not only, but
no. But you understand what I'm saying? Is this a real context here that, you know, there's someone that you can that you've actually come in contact or heard from those who have contact that this is their mentality? Or is it just an option? And this person is somebody that you need to worry about? Or is it just it brought up a doubt? The first one. Okay. So the point is it doesn't matter. If they're involved in that, then they can be involved there. But the point is if you have a different determination, you just focus where you... Because this is what's being offered. Then if there's any if attraction to any expansion beyond this, then that's there. Why not? How else do you get Vaikuntha? Right? They're attracted to an expansion of Krishna. Does that make sense? So if they are, then fine. Like that. Does that make sense? Because if you're giving the highest, you can get everything else there also.
Any particular form, let's say, in the spiritual world, we have to get training from this eternal servant or somebody who are in the line of this.
No, its point is when you're dealing in the Gaudiya line, and if you're dealing with the Chintamayavada Tattva, then you're dealing with anything else within Braja or within any other realm. Because if you're dealing with the Braja is a Chintamayavada Tattva, all the other realms are either Vishishta Dvait, Dvaita Dvait, and Vishuddha Dvait. You know, those are all included in a Chintamayavada Tattva. So by following our program, you can get wherever you want. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like this. The locals here are getting to America. It's working. No? You didn't catch the context. Okay, so we'll move on. So, does that make sense? So the point is because you're having that, you can get anything else. You don't have to worry. In Chaitanya Leela, you had so many kinds of devotees there. Right? But specifically what's being offered is this Braja Bhakti. And of that, then, to be able to, you know, follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas here. Is that okay? But the other things you can get, if that's what you're interested in, fine. But, yeah. Okay.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurav ki.